Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Wow. Wow. Well, I am very privileged today. I am joined by Stephen J. Manning, who is a business expert. He's been around since, well, since the history of AI practically was invented. So we're gonna dig into the evolution of AI technology and the future of the AI revolution, because we know, as well as you do, if you're actually listening to this, that we're at a stage now where everything is being affected by AI. Writing, video editing, transcription creation, political campaigning, which is, dates back since Kennedy was in fact inaugurated and before. So welcome, Stephen. It's lovely to see you and speak with you again. I always enjoy our conversations. You have valuable wisdom to share from your decades of real world battle hardened experience. And it's really always a pleasure.
Are you saying that I'm really that old? Is that what you're saying, Nathaniel?
No, I'm saying you're battle hardened.
That is true. And I thank you for doing this. This is a great topic, a lot of fun. And heck, if I don't think about AI, my car won't start. So it's a good thing.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, I think from my point of view, I will just, you're an amazing writer. You've written a lot of subject lines in your time in the advertising world, which you were in. You grew a business from a small, very small business into a $1 billion a year enterprise, and you've sold, over $47 billion worth of goods and services online and offline using various mediums, including mail, including email, including websites, and all of that information that you've absorbed, you've had to crunch numbers and you've had to crunch data. And I know you use AI just for research for certain things. Did you want to just sort of talk a little bit about that before we dig into some more detailed stuff?
Sure. Addressing what you just said, using data, crunching numbers. I have friends and colleagues, associates who bristle when I say, top name advertising folks, hey, advertising without marketing doesn't exist. Marketing without advertising doesn't exist. And then all that without operations doesn't really exist. And then, of course, the underlying thing is the homework, the number crunching. None of that exists without number crunching. Number crunching is not possible without data. So, the trite thing you hear, knowledge is power. Well, that is true, but data is just indispensable to what you and I do. We basically try to convince people to see that which we talk about, that which we work on. We're selling. Everybody out there is selling something all the time. You wake up in the morning and you sell to yourself to get out of bed, go to work. Now, so AI, you and I have done talks on AI. We have written articles on AI. We've written columns on it, et cetera. And all this fantastic newfangled thing called AI. Wow, is that cool? Well, it is, to be sure, cool. But, and you allow me, thank you for relating my first brush with AI, if you will. Now, let's go back to the 1980s. I was a baby. We had, in our marketing business, we had a consumer database of some 10 million customers. And then, additional to that, we have a couple billion data points about our customers. Also, other data that we acquired externally for our new customer acquisition marketing effort. So it was our data, external data. We bought some, rented some, acquired, however. Now, this is what we did with it. So let me just put it in a simple formula using the really slick words that are being used everywhere by everyone. Big data. Well, we had big data. At the time, 2 or 3 billion data points is big data. Remember, this is the 80s now. And then we did data mining. Well, we interrogated the data. That's obvious we had it. And then we developed predictive models for data. Well, just a few years earlier, we called regression models, but predictive models. Not once we had those predictive models, we then used those to create decision-making models. Now, add that up, big data, data mining, predictive models, creating decision-making paradigms, et cetera. What the heck is that? It's AI, isn't it? It's AI. It's artificial intelligence. Again, you'll forgive me. I was just not smart enough to come up with a really slick acronym like AI. I call that synthetic data. In the mid-80s, some 70% of all my new customer prospecting was done to synthetically develop data. All of that came from this little formula, which of course used a couple of biggest computers in the United States to crunch. But what we didn't have leading up to AI today, well, we didn't really have the incredible massive breadth of data we have today. Your mobile phone can access data of the size and breadth that's incomprehensible to me. Of course, we did not have the computing power that we have now. And the computing power we have now is massive and damn near free. And then we didn't have this incredible unlimited bandwidth to transmit all this data. You know, we have it now, and it's so incredibly inexpensive. But how is AI different today than it was in the 80s? Well, it is quantitatively better. And qualitatively, certainly better, because it's just a bigger breadth of stuff that it uses. I was thinking about this just this morning. 15 years ago, which in context of tech is the Stone Ages. 15 years ago, that's when man first began walking upright. And that was just after we discovered fire and the wheel, you know, 15 years. I drove through a drive-up window in an otherwise ordinary hamburger place in Los Angeles, California. So I pulled up to the speaker, and I got a great greeting from Joanna. Hey, welcome, welcome. Thank you for coming. What can we get you? I said, nice person. So I said, well, you know, I would like a couple of double cheeseburgers. Oh, 2 cheeseburgers. And Joanna said, what would you like on those? I said, well, one of those, I want everything. I want everything. And she said, sir, would you like the raw onions or the fried onions? I said, oh, regular onions is fine. And my second burger, she said, what would you like on the second burger? I said, nothing. Just the meat and the cheese, no dressing, and please, no salt. She said, great. And then anything else? I said, I'd like 2 orders of French fries. Joanna asked me if I wanted one of those without salt. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you. And then she said, would you care for a couple sodas or water? I said, great. I'd like 2 large Cokes. To which Joanna said, would you like one of those, a Diet Coke? I said, absolutely. And then she said, would you like me to add a chocolate or vanilla milkshake to your order? And by the way, we also make no sugar added smoothies if you'd like one. Said, no, I'm good. Thank you very much. Said, thank you for your order. Thank you for your business. And then she said, well, move up to the next window. Sally will take your, will collect your money, $27.32. And by the way, she could take cash or any number of debit cards, credit cards, including your First Interstate MasterCard. And thank you for coming. Okay. Now, the part about the credit card, it took me a little homework to figure that one out. Because how the hell did Joanna know I had a First Interstate credit card, which I did. And then She said, thank you very much. And I went and got my order. Well, Joanna turned out to be a very nice blue and white IBM machine running an Oracle database in some small town in Colorado. AI, no? Tell me how that's not AI. Okay. And that was a long time ago. And forgive the digression, but I did make it a project to find Joanna. Turned out I knew a couple of tech folks who said, well, you know, sooner or later I found somebody in Colorado Springs who showed me Joanna. It's an ordinary IBM machine running in a big old Oracle database. And there were a couple of very bright young women and men that were messing with it. And it took me, ultimately a real business relationship to find out, how the heck did you know I had that credit card? And they said, well, that's why you're talking to us instead of the other way around. But we figured it out. Nowadays, that's a rather simple thing to do. So, you know, we can read you, we can scan your irises, we can scan your license plates, we can do a whole lot of things when you walk through our front door. But that's going back in time to what we do today, which is spellbinding.
But all of that data collection is all, we've been talking about it for a long, long time, haven't we? As you know, as to how much data we want to give away. Do we want to let people use our data? So obviously you've got these AI acts, you've got, you know, the European AI Act, which came in very recently. And that is obviously being recreated by other countries. There are lots of countries in Africa at the moment who've been working on that. They're creating like frameworks. Each country is creating a framework. Some will obviously do those faster than others, and then they will just basically use that as a crib sheet to kind of carry across some of the best policies and things like that. But in terms of kind of what data we give up, it really, I've always thought it should be in our own hands. It should be our own decision as to what data we give up. And I really found it quite intrusive when I went to the chemist in the UK, maybe six months ago, and I basically bought something, and then the receipt came out of the machine, which offered me a really targeted voucher to something that I'd actually bought on that card before. And I found that really quite intrusive. I really didn't like it, and it didn't make me feel good. But actually, you know, after speaking with Michael Tobin, OBE, about this, he actually believes that it's very time saving, and actually it can be used in a very good way. I believe also, you know, if you are trying to commit a crime, then AI and mass surveillance is a good thing, because that's going to prevent you from committing a crime. But back to writing, and, you know, a lot of people like to, you know, I mean, we're on LinkedIn together. We bounce back and forth a few things from time to time on there. And, you know, you coined the phrase word salad, which basically means a whole load of junk that people are basically writing. I have a handful of connections that write newsletters regularly, and I read those newsletters. Some of them are, well, most of them, in fact, are actually very good. The ones that I have a problem with are the ones that don't actually edit the text. They probably don't brief it correctly. They probably only give it a very short brief and say, write something about blah, blah, blah. So then obviously the AI, whichever one it is, I mean, we all know there are four or five, maybe more, models that go out and they grab a load of stuff off the internet and they create this basic garbage. It's garbage, right? A lot of it. And, you know, I personally use it for research like you do. I like to play around with sort of subject lines. I like to use it to grab information and to kind of find facts out, which I think are very, very important. But also I use it for creating transcripts, writing preliminary blogs from podcasts that I do, et cetera, et cetera. But I like to have a free-flowing conversation, and then I extract information from there. So it's very different to actually how a lot of people use it, which is to go out, they write a subject line and they say, write a blog about X, Y, and Z. And then it trawls the internet and it basically parrots the same information that has basically been scanned by the AI and created from this kind of billions and billions of web pages. So what's your sort of view, Stephen, on that?
First of all, the fundamental problem, fundamental issue, I think, with AI, and it's just as a gross statement, I'd like to address the writing part because it's very close to my heart as it is to yours, to my professional life. The problem with AI, the fundamental problem is the same as it is with every major advance in technology. Technology gallops ahead, way ahead of the structure you need to use it and harness it properly. There is no, often when these gets incredible quantum leaps in technology, there is no legal or social or economic understructure to support it. So the train leaves the station, excuse me, the proverbial horse leaves the barn, and then we're trying to figure out what to do with it. And that's been, it's always a problem. It's true in medicine, it's true in drug research, it's true in mining, it's true in everything. Technology typically gallops way ahead or our ability to control it. Now, let me just do a little hopscotching here. Because I do mess with AI in context of writing to a very limited extent and to research to a greater extent. First, thank you for giving me credit for Word Salad. I actually borrowed some of that from these French and Austrian philosophers in 1483, who defined that as the activity of textbook schizophrenics. I'm glad to send anyone two paragraphs on that if you want to read something irrelevant. Now, I have the privilege, as you do, and frequently the pleasure to communicate with some very interesting people. All of you watching, listen to this. You want to look into the body of Nathaniel's work. Impossible to read through 300 interviews, but just glance and you'll recognize names, big names in business, intellectuals, authors, etc. Humbly, I communicate with some really cool people who give me their time for reasons unclear to me, but it's not important. And some of those also names that you might recognize in business, in education, in politics, and so on. And some of these folks have multiple New York Times bestsellers and endowed chairs. I'm just a humble marketing guy, you know? And when they write an email, it's two pages of annotations. And it requires a sit down and a few hours to say, this is great, I'm going to try to read, but it's just asking how your kid's doing because he had a bad cold. But so some time ago, I said, I would like all AI-generated content to be watermarked. Evidently, that gets some traction. Why? Because, hey, I'm an author. I'd like to think I'm capable of marginally authentic writing, marginally independent thinking. So I say, you know, I'd love all that to be watermarked AI. And then what I've taken to doing to some of the folks I exchange thoughts, messages, letters, whatever with is, and I wrote this a few times, I would like you to assert that no less than 75% of what you write for me is original, not AI. One of the aforementioned folks sent me a note that said, very simply, are you trying to lose friends? No. Okay, you know what?
Classic.
I'd like to think that if you push yourself, if you work harder than everyone else, you can skirt independent thinking, original thinking. Wouldn't that be cool? And expressing that is even cooler, to use a modern world, cool. Now, what do I do with AI? Because you can't ignore that elephant in the room. It just can't. If I ignore it, this microphone will go dead, period, because it's voice activated. What is that? Oh, it's an AI function. Anyway, so here's Copilot. Okay, now what do I do with Copilot? Copilot to me is a really slick Google. Oh, by the way, I remember the kids in Champlain first created a graphic user interface for a browser. I might have been among the first 10, 20 people who ever see AltaVista. The day I saw it, I was useless for 3 days. That's all I sat there for 30 straight hours looking up stuff. Right now, I'm going to look up Schooler, and there's 375,000 references. You know, so Copilot is a really great filter for me. I can ask a question and get this much response. Then I can choose to be involved for 3 days. It's a great research tool. Writing. As you know, I write. I write for fun and profit. Fun stuff. Now, fun for me may not be fun for my readers, but hey. So I then go to...
Well, hold on a minute. I that's how I actually met you. Because I was researching a topic and I found one of your blogs. It was very in-depth. And it clearly had a lot of thought that went into it. And I find your writing exceptionally good. But I wanted to just interrupt you because I wanted to tell you that I wasn't just looking at my phone just because I had a notification, because it's actually on airplane mode. But I found something on Facebook the other day, which I think is very, very interesting in regards to this conversation. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just had to tell you because I think it's really interesting. And I didn't tell you before. So this lady called Joanna Machewska, I guess she's Polish, but she says, you know what the biggest problem with pushing all things AI is? Wrong direction. I want AI to do my laundry and dishes so that I can do art and writing, not for AI to do my art and writing so that I can do my laundry and dishes,
AI can tell you that you need to do your laundry, and AI can tell your washing machine what to do. You know, historically, I remember when we discovered this really cool thing where if you want researching for red pill boxes, we followed you around the internet. Everywhere you went, we showed you an ad for the red pill box. And then I got into something called location-based advertising. And man, I was threatened by all the great brains that I'm going to get handcuffed. You drive down the street and your cell phone goes off. Hi, Nat. You know the red pill box you've been looking for? We have in stock. Block and a half on your right at Mary Ellen's store. Stop by. That was true. Shoes and sweaters. Oh, okay. Was even worse, where your cell phone went off and said, hey, Nathaniel, I think you're running out of toilet paper. Stop at Ralph's across the street. We have it on sale. What do you mean I ran out of toilet paper? How do you know? Well, you know, the database says that you buy it at some frequency. Now we know you're running out. That's a little bit different than when you walk into the office supply store and your cell phone goes off and says, hey, Nat, you need toner for your printer. Aisle 3, eye level halfway down. Show this to the cashier. You get a 20% discount. How do they know my toner is out of print? Okay. You know, in terms of writing, because that is a core subject here, and doing the laundry, hey, good luck. You cannot buy a refrigerator that's not going to tell you what you're going to eat next. It's just the way it is. The writing part. I'm a writer. I love to write. I like to write. I enjoy the process. I have to be very careful not to entertain myself. Because after all, when you write for profit, you serve many masters, including your own desire to do it well. So what I do with Gemini or Bard, what I do with that is When I write, as you know, my syntax is a little different for a couple of different reasons. I'm not a native speaker. And I love words, so I'm inclined to use a bunch. And then I love $50 words. That's how I learned the language. I learned the language by learning a million words, and then I figured how to put them back together. So last time I used AI, I wrote this sentence that said, this is a really challenging and upsetting intellectual Rubik's Cube. I thought that was slick. I then thought about it, and I said, but 99% of people are going to say, what an arrogant ass. So I went to Gemini and I said, give me an alternative sentence to this. And I got five options to be very serious, five options to be more focused, five options to be more lighthearted. Heck, I didn't know there were that many people who knew what a Rubik's Cube was. Now that, to me, is a wonderful use of that, which is just the biggest filing cabinet on Earth. And there's some little people in there saying, Steve, we got a better sentence for you. Here it is. I would never go to AI and say, I need 1,600 words on sustainability. Oof. Because I can sit down and write 1,600 words on sustainability and hopefully pray that in there they may be an original thought or skirting some original thought. Now,
yeah,
you and I read and exchange firepower on so much that we read. There are people that produce the amount of content daily that humans can't do. Why? Because you can't type that fast. You can't dictate that fast. So when I read a post by this guy, that woman, that person, big names, all I have to just click on it and I see the format. Same thing.
Yeah.
So you didn't write this. You did not write this. I'm inclined to do this. Some of these people I know say, when you decide to write one original sentence, let me know. Now, not to be confused with the research opportunity to do that. You know, give me ancillary topics to this topic. Great use. Okay. You know, is there anything tangential to the core topic that really has an impact? Great use. And of course, the ever-present, give me synonyms for this word. Why? Because I'm using a word even I don't like, or I really want a powerful word. Oh, I think it's phenomenal. You know, that part of the writing process is phenomenal. The problem with AI and writing, as far as I'm concerned, is I think that AI can be a cancer to the creative writing process and the creative thinking process. You know what? If I want to talk about technology, if I want to talk security, I'll call you. I'm not going to go to some database and interrogate.
But that's the point, isn't it? There are so many viewpoints, especially on security. Like, there are so many viewpoints that it is absolutely insane. I mean, I'm part of the cybersecurity community now, which is just amazing, and it is unbelievable. They all sort of seem to agree, but then they've all got their own kind of ideas and things like this. But it's with writing. And also creating videos, creating questions for guests, creating talking points. There's a certain amount of research that must go at the forefront of all of these things. If you're going to go and create a blog, you need to research the topic. You need to make sure it's factually correct. It's been proven that ChatGPT and Bard and whatever, Gemini, whatever you call it now, and these other models, they're not factually correct, a lot of them. So if you want to look stupid by churning out a load of content, I recommend actually that you just don't. I recommend that you literally share someone else's blog. If you think it's a really good blog, share someone else's blog, share someone's short video or podcast and say, you know, I really enjoyed this. And this is why. Thank you so much for taking the time to create a piece of really good content. Yeah. And that's kind of my attitude. But, you know, videos are coming. You know, there are a number of tools that can create videos. you know, you've got this instant chats, which I believe are brilliant. If they're going to save consumers time, I'm all for the chatbot. I've been for the chatbots for the last 10 years where companies have been talking about them. I'm really pro chatbot. I'm so sick of mediocre customer service. But you know, if you can secure that data, you can integrate a chatbot within your working environment, your IT department can do it, and it's going to benefit the business because it's actually driven by sales and it's driven by very clever minds. I'm all for that stuff. I'm just not for drivel. I'm not for manipulative messaging that can be created using AI, which has been rife for the last, well, since Brexit happened, since the presidential campaign happened. We had a firm called Cambridge Analytica. Maybe you guys don't know if you're listening to this. Stephen and I know because we're both in marketing, really, and we know about how these manipulative messages were created. And unfortunately, that was the first sign that AI is becoming mainstream. And that really pushed things forward because they were used to not just encourage the votes, but actually to suppress voters, to stop people voting by putting negative connotations. These tools are still being used in Africa, in many, many countries around the world to suppress presidential elections and governmental elections. And it's very worrying, to be honest. And I think that many, many people really don't know what's actually going on. And the future, I'm hopeful about it. But like you say, the horse has already bolted, hasn't it? And with this revolution that we have begun to experience, the rate of change is so fast that regulation is probably 5 years behind what's actually going on, I think.
I think it's worrisome, without a doubt. I think about it in context of what are major advances in sciences or technology in my lifetime, where, you know, there's an inflection point, there's a Rubicon, where it hits the wall. Is there a time when there will be a revolution among working populations against AI taking over their jobs, which AI can, in fact, take over a lot of jobs because sheer computing power, what AI can crank out in 2 seconds, this is going to take me 2 months. I thought about it, and I'm thinking, the only area of science, if you will, that I can relate to just by reading, of course, is genetics. You know, the science of genetics is phenomenal. It is so far-reaching from an economic standpoint, from a social standpoint, the whole social engineering version of that. That, in my opinion, has hit a wall. That didn't cross the Rubicon because the enough people said the potential for this immense thing is as potentially negative as it is potentially positive. Let's not do that. Let's not destroy ourselves. Let's not go down the rabbit hole creating master races where people can afford it. That's not the idea. That's not the idea of survival on the planet. that's scary stuff. But AI is so darn useful in so many ways. But it has to be, like everything else, in the wrong hands. It has incredibly destructive potential. You know, in writing, I think it dulls the experience of writing. I think it dulls the creative stuff. I think that it's an amazing thing when you wake up at 3 a.m. hounded by a thought or an idea, and instead of doing something destructive to yourself or to people around you, sit down and knock out a few hundred words, say, "Yo, Nathaniel, what do you think?" That's and if you can't get help, if nothing else, formulating a structure. Hey, what did I miss here? Did I miss anything? Okay, you might interrogate an AI machine and say, here are the topic, and here are the 9 9 integral things. Are there any others I may have missed? Now then, be careful. Because exactly. You're not talking to a couple of smart people. You're talking to a database. I love it. People say, well, AI told me. Whoa, you're talking to a database. You're talking to Joanna in a little room in Colorado Springs. You're talking to Larry Ellis's database.
Yeah.
You're talking to my consumer database. So it's not like, and then you can interrogate and develop a relationship. People are going to want to marry their AI machine eventually.
Well, there are all those sort of connotations, aren't there? But we both read MIT Technology Review, and there's so much great stuff going on in technology, in particular with weather forecasting. I mean, that is hitting to such an accurate level. The next year or two, it's going to reach some really amazing forecasting abilities. I'm very excited about that. I'm excited about the medicine. I'm excited about operations that are kind of happening. I mean, I'm excited about all of this sort of stuff. But what I'm not excited about,
it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Is dumbing the human brain and the laziness, the lack of care, the problem is that we're going through the same thing that we went through when the Industrial Revolution came along, which is, we can just work harder. We're going to take all this time that we've just saved and we're going to work harder. And this is the whole problem. Technology is here, guys. It's not supposed to encourage you to work harder. It's supposed to encourage you to work smarter, be more accurate, be more thoughtful. I mean, one of the best blogs I've ever written, which I actually ghost wrote a blog for someone because he was having trouble at churning out this blog for me. And I'm not mentioning any names, but basically the guy had multiple New York Times bestselling books, right? And I remember clearly I sat in this jacuzzi one day and I thought about this concept of basically writing a blog for this guy. And I wrote him a blog and it came out and I sent him the blog and it wasn't the writing ability that was amazing. It was the thinking that was behind it. The deep thing, it's like the concept. If you think back to the 1955 or whatever film with Robot Robbie in, and this Robot Robbie, excuse me, Robot Robbie was in this film and The Hidden Planet, I believe it was called. And Robot Robbie could translate into 110 languages. He could create things from his stomach, right? And it's like, well, we got 3D printers. We've got all of these things. And actually, if you look backwards and then you look forwards, all you need to do is put them together and use your imagination to say, well, you know, it's kind of an exciting space to be, but we need to have an air of caution. We need to keep our brains going. And that's why I spend multiple hours a week talking to you, Stephen, because I really enjoy it. Always learn something very valuable. And
As do I, Nathaniel.
Thank you. And yeah, and I want to thank everyone for listening. And please do go and check out StephenJManning.com, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll drop a link somewhere to that. And you can also check out the show notes, which I will drop somewhere. Please do comment if you've got any really interesting comments. We'd love to hear from you. We're always open to interesting guests and great content from people if they've got interesting things to say. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.